Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Based on a scheduling conflict that I didn't catch until too late, I was doing my workshop in Las Vegas at the Money Show. And the workshop, basically I ended up going over what was really the problem, but the workshop contradicted with my radio program. So I was only able to do about the last 5 or 6 minutes of the program. So if any of you are listening through, well, we repeated the program before where there was some technical difficulty, and I was able to talk live for about 5 minutes. So if anybody is looking for the archive version of last week's program on my website, it's not there. I told them not to bother to put it up since it was simply a repeat of the show from the week prior. So that one won't go up there and you're not missing anything. And again, the website, for those of you who don't know about the archives, is www.europac.net. www.europac.net. And that's where you can go and listen to prior broadcasts. Now, again, to call up the show and ask a question on the air, the telephone number is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. The lines are open, so call. I'd like to have as many callers as I can, both to get some conversation and so I know people are listening. Now, I know one of the topics I really want to talk about at the beginning of the hour is inflation. We had the PPI numbers that came out yesterday, and we had the CPI numbers that came out today. And, you know, the most interesting thing, once again, is not that these numbers are bad, and they were bad, but it's the way the media spun them. You know, I was watching CNBC this morning, and the CPI came out, and the number was up 0.6%, which is a lot of inflation in 1 month. And you would expect them to say, oh, that's a pretty bad number. I mean, it was actually worse than what they were anticipating. But the core CPI was unchanged. And all the news I heard all day was how inflation was non-existent, that the inflation numbers came out so benign because this core rate came out at zero. Now, what's the core rate? It's just one portion of the overall CPI. The actual CPI, which includes the core, I mean, the core is in there. The total CPI, which includes the core, was up 0.6%. But what the media wants to look at is just this one little section. And if this one little segment isn't big, they're going to ignore the actual inflation. Now, I've talked about this core CPI in the past, and I call it pro forma CPI, because that's what it's like. It's like earnings. Pro forma earnings is what Wall Street's definition of earnings is when they tell you not to count all the negative things that lost money. They say, well, if you don't count the loss here, and if you don't count the loss here, then we had earnings. But the reality is, there's a loss. Now, I can see if you have if there's some extraordinary event once in a while, okay, throw it off. But what Wall Street has a habit of doing is every quarter taking the same losses out and saying that there's really earnings. That's for their way of massaging it. Well, the same thing is happening with the CPI. Now, the core CPI, right, one of the things that's so misleading about the core CPI is it's 40% rents. And I've talked about in the past why the real estate bubble is artificially suppressing rents. And so rents are actually very low because real estate prices are very high. And real estate prices, coincidentally, are not in the core. They're not anywhere in the CPI. They took those out a long time ago. And so all we have is rents, which is giving a distorted picture of the real cost of housing, which is going up. And then, of course, a lot of the core CPI is adjusted hedonically by the government for what they perceive to be quality improvements. So it's the most manipulated part of the CPI, and coincidentally, that's the exact portion of the CPI that the government wants us to focus on, that Wall Street wants us to focus on, to say that there's no inflation. Meanwhile, inflation goes charging ahead. The first 4 months of this year, the first 4 months, January, February, March, April, if you annualize those 4 months, and if it does that for the rest of the year, inflation as measured by the CPI, which I still think is understating inflation, will be 4.8%. That's almost 5%. That's the highest inflation in the United States since 1990. In 15 years, that's the highest inflation, yet we're running the highest inflation in 15 years, yet the headline all day long on CNBC is that there's no inflation, that inflation is benign. And we have this big bond market rally and this big stock market rally because there's no inflation, when it's the highest it's been in 15 years. In fact, in 1971, when Nixon imposed wage and price controls, in 1971, inflation was 4.6% for the whole year. It's higher than that right now. So we actually have worse inflation right now, and everybody says there's no inflation, than inflation was in 1971, when we thought it was so bad that we had to impose wage and price controls to fight it. That's how far we've gone. I said, it's a good, you know, too bad tricky Dick Nixon wasn't tricky enough to come up with the core CPI on his own, because maybe he could have convinced the public that there was no inflation in the 70s either. Anyway, let me take the call. I've got Bob on the line from Buffalo, New York. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, Peter. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, I have a question for you. You know, I listen to CNBC a lot, but I'm glad I was listening 2 weeks ago when I saw you on there, because now I follow you.
Oh, good. Well, good. Good.
Yeah, I got so sick of listening to light. Garbage. It was driving me crazy, but I could never find anybody who was telling the truth. And then I heard you. I was like, wow, somebody's actually, and they were trying to beat you up on the show when you were telling them all this stuff.
Well, you know, as I said, you know, they wanted to kill the messenger.
Exactly. Now, the question I have is they kept harping this morning saying, oh, well, the bond, the 10-year bond is down at 4%, so we must not have any inflation. So what is your answer to that?
That's a good question. And I wrote a commentary, and I touched on that. If you go to my website and read my commentary, it's on my website right now at europac.net.
Okay.
But there's a few explanations of that conundrum. You know, Greenspan called it a conundrum. And it's not a conundrum to me. I mean, I know exactly what's going on. Number one, the fact that people who are buying bonds perceive that there's no inflation doesn't mean that those perceptions are correct. Remember, in the latter part of the 1990s, people were paying tremendous multiples for stocks, particularly technology stocks and internet stocks, because they were anticipating a lot of earnings in the future that they thought were going to materialize. Now, we now know in hindsight, and I mean, I knew in foresight, but we all know now, that those earnings never materialized. And so the prices that people were paying were based on earnings that never showed up. So the people who were buying stocks were wrong, right?
Right.
They were making, their judgment was incorrect. And so they paid too much for stocks. Now, I think people who are buying bonds today are making the same mistake, only with respect to inflation. Rather than overestimating earnings, they're underestimating inflation. And so people who are buying bonds right now are going to be just as sorry as the people who were buying stocks in the 1990s, because their expectations are wrong. Right? They're buying the hype. They're buying Wall Street's hype and the media's hype instead of looking at reality. Right? They're looking at pro forma inflation, just like back in the 1990s they were looking at pro forma earnings instead of real earnings. And so you got to actually look at inflation. So that's number one. But I think an even more important element of this whole thing is that you have to look at who's actually buying 10-year government bonds right now. Okay. There's very few investors who are buying government bonds. I mean, very few people are buying 10-year government bonds intending on holding them for 10 years and clipping coupons. If you look at who's buying bonds right now, number one, it's hedge funds. It's leveraged hedge funds. And what they're doing is they're taking advantage of the yield curve. They're borrowing short and lending long, which means they borrow at the short end and they buy the 10-year and they leverage it up and they make the spread. These guys are just speculating on the difference between the rates. They don't care about holding them to maturity. They're playing the yield curve. Then you've got the mortgage players who are hedging their mortgage portfolios, and they do that right now by buying 10-year bonds. So they don't care about the investment value or inflation. They're just hedging known or perceived risks in their mortgage portfolios. And then number three, you have foreign central banks, and foreign central banks are buying simply for political reasons. They're buying to support the dollar. So I think you have very little real investor demand in the bond market right now. I think you have some buyers for political reasons, for speculative reasons, and for hedging reasons. But I think all of those buyers, the bankers, the hedgers, and the speculators could very easily turn into sellers of bonds very quickly, in which case the price will collapse because there is no real investment demand for a 10-year bond that's paid 4% when even by the government's own measure of inflation, the CPI, it's running at an annual rate of 4.8%.
All right, you're losing money.
Of course. And of course, the inflation is a lot higher. If the CPI is saying inflation is 4.8, it's probably more like 7 or 8.
Does the bond have anything to do with the weakness of the economy as well? Could that be part of it or no? Or that doesn't matter?
Well, the economy, I think, is fundamentally flawed. But if you measure the economy by consumer spending, it's not weak right now because consumers are spending a bundle. But the problem is they're spending borrowed money. And they're spending it to... So we're going deeper into debt. So the economy basically is becoming more and more unhealthy as a result of all this supposed... But I don't think the bond market is looking at that. I think it's all these other buyers, these hedgers and the speculators and the foreign central banks that are putting an artificial bid in the market. And I think that's what's supporting it. But there's nothing real underneath it. And these buyers can go away. They can disappear just like the people who were buying the dot-coms disappeared. And once the buyers are gone, the prices will plunge because back in the Internet days, nobody was buying, internet stocks to own them for the long run to collect the dividends because they had no dividends. People were buying them because they were going up. So the people who are buying bonds today, the 10-year bonds, are not buying them because they want the dividends and they want the interest and they want to hold them to maturity. They're buying them for some other reason. And as soon as that reason turns around, there's no buyers because there are no real buyers for 10-year bonds. You have to have your head examined. You follow me?
Well, who are they going to sell them to then?
They're not going to sell them to anybody. The prices are going to collapse. I mean, they'll sell them to some lower price than what we've got right now.
Right.
That's the thing. When the prices are going to plunge and interest rates are going to skyrocket, once interest rates have to adjust to a real level to compensate people who buy these bonds for investments to hold them to maturity.
Well, then my question is, if inflation is rising, which I believe it is. You just ask anybody out there who's buying food or energy or whatever else they're buying. All the prices are up. The Fed is behind the power curve. He needs to get moving.
Yeah, but they can't. See, that's my whole point. The Fed knows that if they raised interest rates to a level to stop the inflation, right?
Right.
They crush the economy. So what the Fed does is rather than raise the interest rates to where they should be, they just pretend that there's no inflation, and that gives them cover. That enables them not to raise interest rates because they just lie and pretend there's no inflation. If they admitted there was an inflation problem, they'd have to raise interest rates and we'd be in a recession. So what they do is they tell us there is no inflation so they can get away with keeping interest rates low. And the amazing thing about it is they're getting away with it. I mean, people are actually dumb enough. I mean, I think that if you went, back to Nazi Germany and, they had a big, propaganda department, Goebbels was the head of propaganda, I think that the Nazis would be extremely impressed at what the American government is able to pull off. I mean, it's just amazing.
Do that, though.
It was a free society. They had a government-controlled society. I think we've got better propaganda today in the United States than they were able to pull off back then in Nazi Germany. That we could actually convince the American public that there's no inflation despite the fact that prices are rising all over the place.
But isn't that a detriment down the road if he doesn't raise?
Of course. But see, the government doesn't care about a detriment down the road. They care about a detriment right now. That's all they can only see as far as the next election. And what they're thinking is,
pay me later.
Get to another election. And the Wall Street crowd, the guys that manage money that you see on CNBC, all they can think about is their next quarterly performance fee. They want to keep everything going so they can ring the cash register for another quarter. And CNBC, they want to keep their advertisers they don't want the markets to collapse and their advertisers to stop advertising. So everybody's got a vested interest in perpetuating this nonsense, this mania. But what you've got to do is understand that all those vested interests are contrary to your own interests as a saver, as an investor. Everybody's got to think for themselves, understand that what they're getting is not truth, what they're getting is propaganda and spin, and that you got to think for yourself and act to protect your wealth before it's gone.
Well, what are the ramifications, though, if they get too far behind and they don't raise quickly enough like they're doing now?
Well, the ramifications are the further behind the curve they fall, the further ahead of the curve they're going to have to get to stop the inflation, which means that, you know, the worse it's going to be. You know, and the more they put it off, the more we run the risk of hyperinflation, which is where the U.S. dollar becomes practically worthless as a currency. And everybody that saved dollars is completely wiped out. That's the risk that they want if they put it off so long. Now, as it stands, we can avoid hyperinflation right now, but it's going to, if they were to get interest rates where they needed to be, we would have a major economic calamity.
Right.
And we would have a collapse of the stock market and the real estate market. We have a severe recession. We have bankruptcies and foreclosures, and even a lot of government-sponsored enterprises like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac would probably go bankrupt. So would the Pension Guarantee Corp. You know, so would General Motors and Ford and the airlines and all sorts of other companies that are in bad shape with underfunded pensions. A lot of major companies would go out of business if the Federal Reserve did the right thing. But the problem is, if they delayed doing the right thing, even more companies are going to go out of business, and they run the risk of wiping out the savings of the entire baby boom generation.
Right, because if you get hyperinflation, the dollar's not going to be worth anything.
Exactly. Now, even if we don't get hyperinflation, the dollar is going to be worth a lot less than it is today, which is exactly why I am trying to help as many Americans as I can to understand this and to act on it by, you know, opening up an account with us at Euro-Pacific Capital, sending us their dollars, and letting us get rid of them and
right.
turn them into real assets around the world in other countries so that you can get investments denominated in currencies that aren't going to collapse and that are going to deliver real purchasing power in their dividends that will, you know, enable my clients to maintain at least a modicum of their current standard of living. Otherwise, it's going to be impossible.
Well, I just want to say, hey, you're doing a great job. And the other thing I want to tell you, I used to listen to Jim Rogers. I still follow some of his stuff, and his thinking is right in line with what you're
talking about. Yeah, I mean, Jim Rogers, you know, and people think he's a little wacko over there because he wears a bow tie and, you know, and I don't know, and he talks about commodities. But, no, Jim's a good guy. And you know, we put a lot of people into a commodities fund that bears his name. We've been doing it for years. And, no, Jim says a lot of the same things as me. I've had many a private conversation with him. And, you know, we disagree on nothing. I think he pulls his punches somewhat on CNBC and on Fox. You know, he doesn't talk as dire because I don't think he wants to, you know, be put too far from the mainstream. But in private conversations, yeah, I mean, he and I are basically saying the same things and we're doing the same things. We're investing our money out of the country. He talks about the fact that, you know, he finally has a daughter. He got married late in life. He's always been traveling. And so he's got a young daughter. But he talks about the fact that she has a bank account, but it's not in the United States. And she owns gold, but she doesn't own dollars.
Right, and he was saying the same thing you're saying. China's the place to be and out of the United States.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the talk we're hearing now about the Chinese renminbi, when is it going to get floated? One of the smartest investments that I think people can make right now is to buy these mainland Chinese assets, the conservative ones that pay dividends, because when they float the currency, these things are going to skyrocket. I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for anybody listening to me to get in on some assets that are artificially depressed in price.
Right, just
know the government's going to allow the currency to rise. And what we're doing is I'm trying to find the companies that actually benefit from this. That's why I like the utilities in China, because the utilities, when the Chinese currency rises, all of a sudden the utilities' costs go down because you make power using electricity. I mean, you make electricity using natural gas, using coal, using oil. And if the renminbi rises, then the cost of all these raw materials drops for the Chinese utilities. So now their earnings rise. But also, when the renminbi gains in value, all of a sudden their customers, the Chinese citizens, are richer. They have more purchasing power. They might be able to buy more energy-consuming products instead of labor-consuming products. Like, they'll buy a washing machine and a dryer, and instead of hanging their clothes on a line, they'll spin them in a washing machine. That uses more electricity. So as the renminbi rises in value, the Chinese utilities sell more electric power, and it costs them less to produce it. Their earnings go up, the stock price goes up, and the whole thing is more valuable for an American because it's all in the currency that's gone up dramatically. So, I mean, these are the types of ideas that we've got here at Euro-Pacific, and they're paying good dividends. And if you don't have an account with us, you should definitely call us and open one. If you do have an account, if you don't own these Chinese utilities, give your broker a call. Call me up and get the facts on these because I think they're a no-brainer.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks for your call. Did you call? call up CNBC to thank them for having me on the air?
Yeah, I did. I sent them a couple emails and everything. I said, put them on again.
Yeah, keep doing that. In fact, anybody that's listening to this broadcast, even if you didn't see me on CNBC, let these guys know. Send an email or a fax to Squawk Box and tell them that, hey, have Peter Schiff on again. You really appreciate it. Give him kudos. Say, hey, I really appreciate hearing another point of view. I'd like to hear it more often. Any chance of having it back on? And, you know, if they get enough of those types of responses, I'll get on there more often.
And the other thing I'm doing is I'm sending emails to Kudlow and rebuttaling all that stuff he's saying on his show, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I mean, I ought to have my own show on CNBC just to balance these guys out.
Boy, I'd love to.
That'd be some kind of sanity there.
I'd love to see it, believe me.
All right, well, thanks. Have you opened up an account with us yet?
Pardon me? I'm going to. I talked to one of your brokers today.
All right, well, good job. You know, take advantage. We've had a little bit of a rally in the dollar the last few months, so take advantage of it.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call, Bob.
God bless you, brother. Bye-bye.
Anyway, I want to take a quick play a break, give a little a message on how to get a hold of Euro Pacific Capital, how to contact us, and we'll pick up the show and take your calls on the other side of the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hi, we're back. It's Peter Schiff, and let me give you the number. The phone lines are open. There are no callers on hold. Give me a call. The number is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. And we're talking about inflation and the media's perception of there being no inflation. We're talking about the pro forma CPI numbers that were released today. And Wall Street and the media got so excited because if they stripped out food and energy and just looked at this core CPI, they found that it was unchanged as opposed to up 0.6%. And, you know, the disingenuous part of the whole thing is that 0.6% positive number also includes the core. I mean, the fact that the core was unchanged is part of that up 0.6%. I mean, if you just looked at food and energy, obviously, it was up a lot more than that. But the media is trying to tell us that because the core rate happened to be unchanged, that there's no inflation. I mean, to put this thing in such ridiculous perspective for the government or Wall Street or whatever, what if food and energy prices went up so dramatically, right? What if food and energy became so expensive, right? Just so expensive that's all you can afford, that no one can buy anything else, that all of your paycheck was consumed eating and paying for energy. Right, because these prices went up, they tripled or they quadrupled, they became so expensive, and because everybody needs food and energy, those are your immediate needs, right? I mean, you're going to buy that stuff first. You know, you're only going to buy the other things with what's left over, right, other than shelter, but shelter's not in the CPI either, because other than rents, but they don't have housing prices. But let's just say that food and energy become so expensive that that's all you can afford, right? So the price of food and energy go through the roof. Now, because nobody is buying anything else, maybe the price of everything else doesn't go up. Maybe the price of everything else stays the same. So the government is trying to say that there's no inflation because only food and energy prices have gone up. Meanwhile, they've gone up dramatically, and inflation is running at 20, 30, 40% a year, 50% a year, whatever it is. Everybody's spending all their money on food and energy, so they've got nothing left over to buy anything else. And that's supposed to mean everything's okay, that there's no inflation? I mean, this whole thing is absurd. I mean, if you're going to measure inflation by the general level of prices, you got to take all the prices. You just can't pick a few prices and say there's no inflation. I mean, there can always be some goods that fall in price because people spend less money on those goods because other goods that they need are rising in price. But you can't just take out all those things that are rising. You know, another thing that they said again on CNBC today, and they say this all the time, and it's just ridiculous, and, you know, that they say the reason that they don't want to count food and energy is because they're volatile. Right? They said, let's take out the things that swing around a lot, and we don't want to be misled to jump to any conclusions based on these volatile components, the food and energy. So let's take out the volatility and just look at what's happening on the core, the part that's not that volatile. Now that makes sense, right? I mean, initially, if you hear it, yeah, you know, we don't want to, you know, up 1 month, big, down 1 month, the next, up, down, you know, we don't want to just, you know, make jump to false conclusions. So let's just take a look at this core. Now that would make sense if it was like that. If food and energy was up 10% 1 month, down 10% the next, up 18%, down 15%, up 4%, you know, if it was really going up and down all over the board, they'd have a point. But the problem is they've been claiming food and energy are volatile for 4 years in a row. And all they do is go up. Right? It's not volatility when they're up every month. I mean, that's a trend. That's the inflation. But they're just saying, well, they're just going to label them volatile and say we're not going to count them. And meanwhile, look at what inflation is. I mean, no other country does this. No other country, I mean, any other country that had annualized inflation for the first 4 months of 4.8%, I mean, any real country, any developed country, not a banana republic, but they'd be in crisis. The central bank would be rushing to tighten rates, and we'd be talking about, oh, no, because most of these central banks in other countries, they have inflation targets, and generally the highest they'll do is 2 to 3% inflation. Some target under 2%, like the ECB. You've got the New Zealand Bank, which says, okay, 2 to 3% is our range for the high end of inflation. But generally, central banks are willing to tolerate inflation of 2 to 3%. No one's going to tolerate 4.8%, yet that's exactly what we've got now so far for 2005, and what are they telling us? Well, we've got no inflation at all. That it's completely contained, that it's benign. The market is rallying because inflation is non-existent. I mean, how stupid do they think we are? Well, I guess pretty stupid, and maybe for a lot of us we are, because remember, a lot of the people bought the same nonsense argument with respect to the stock market. And I guess the media and the government figure if the public was dumb enough to believe all the nonsense about the hype on the internet stocks and the new economy, I guess we could just tell them there's no inflation, and they'll believe that too. So that's what's going on. But, you know, you got to understand that this is the equivalent of the government weatherman telling you that it's raining outside, that it's sunny, rather. The government weatherman telling you that it's sunny, yet you look out the window and you can see the rain falling. Right? Now, I mean, you don't walk out the window without an umbrella just because the government tells you it's sunny. Because if you do that, you're going to get soaked. You got to think for yourself, and you got to grab an umbrella, despite the fact that government weatherman is telling you it's sunny. And basically, that's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you, it's not sunny outside; it's pouring rain. And if you keep listening to the government, and you keep listening to the mainstream media and Wall Street, you're going to get drenched. You know, I'm providing you an umbrella here at Euro Pacific Capital in the form of the ability to protect your wealth, to get out of dollar-denominated assets, which are being debased as we speak, and get into other countries that are not being debased at as great a rate as the dollar is, and get a dividend yield, get real purchasing power, and of course, not overpriced. You know, buy value and buy good dividends, and, you know, invest safely and wisely around the world, not, you know, not just like a speculative, maniac, you know, chasing hype. You got, you know, that's what we're doing. We're looking around the world for the equivalent of modern-day widow and orphan stocks, except we're looking for widow and orphan stocks outside the United States, because I wouldn't put a widow's money in anything in the United States. There's nothing safe here. See, that's the problem. See, the textbooks, the conventional wisdom, if you're conservative, you can't invest internationally. You got to invest in, you know, in corporate bonds and municipal bonds and things like that. But the textbooks are all wrong, because the textbooks assume the dollar's sound. But once you understand that assumption is flawed, then you got to throw that textbook out the window. You can't do what it says. It doesn't matter where you invest your money in the United States. you're going to lose. You're taking a lot of risk, even if you do what the textbooks say is safe. Because what they're telling you to do is safe is predicated on an unsafe currency, meaning the U.S. dollar. So, you know, it's important that people make these decisions. You work a lifetime. People, you know, work, you know, 40 or 50 years and they save money and they hope to retire. A lot of people, it's going to be very sad and very unfortunate that the government's going to pull the rug out from under their retirement because their retirement savings aren't going to buy anything. You know, and so you work your lifetime to earn and save your money. You need to invest some time into figuring out how to protect it and realize that the government's not going to protect it for you. And the media and Wall Street, they're not going to protect it for you. You've got to protect it by yourself. You've got to make these decisions independently. I can help you. All right, we're here to help you, and we're here to help you protect yourself and help you accumulate the types of investments that you need to accumulate if you're going to meet these goals. And again, you can call our company. The number to talk, to call to talk to the brokers is 800-727-7922. You can talk to me if I take the call. If, you know, chances are you might get a different broker, but no matter who you get, you're gonna hear my advice. You're gonna hear my message. We're all on the same page. Everybody at Euro Pacific Capital is trying to bring my message and my investment ideas to whoever calls up, whoever they speak to. And you know, there are probably brokers there now at, again, 800-727-7922. Also, the lines are still open. I invite your calls. The telephone number to call toll free and speak to me live is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. Anyway, so next week I'm going to be speaking at an event, the University Club in New York. They have a monthly dinner. I think it's monthly. Maybe it's not every month. And I'm going to be the speaker this month. I'm going to be giving a 45-minute speech followed by a Q&A period of about a half an hour. It's the University Club in New York. I don't know if any of you are listening to this or members of that club, or if you'd like to become a member and you're interested in hearing this presentation. It's going to be in Manhattan. It's at 1 West 54th Street in New York. The telephone number for the University Club, I guess if you want to make a reservation, 212-572-3404, 212-572-3404, or call my office. That's the University Club. I'm really not sure, you know, if you can go there, if you're not a member of the club. Certainly if you're a member of that organization, definitely make it a point to come on Tuesday night. Also, I will be at the New York Gold Show. I'm not exhibiting or speaking at the Gold Show this year, but I will be at the Gold Show walking around, talking to people that day as well on Tuesday of next week in New York. I actually forget where the Gold Show is, but I will be walking around. I mean, I don't know if anybody will remember what I look like, but if anyone's going to be there, I'll be there for most of that day. But anyway, I'd like also to get some calls for anybody who might have heard us for the first time at the Money Show in Las Vegas. We had another good show. The only problem we had is that my room that I spoke at wasn't large enough. I mean, the people at the Money Show, I continuously tell them I need a bigger room. You know, we filled it completely. I think we turned away 50 to 75 people because there was no room left. I mean, we were trying to pull chairs in from the other rooms. We had people standing. Not only they were standing up, and it was going through the hall, back into the hallway and down the corridor, the fire marshals had to come and tell us that we couldn't have that many people there. So hopefully the next time we speak at the Money Show in Washington, D.C., these guys will finally give me a room that will hold 1,000 people instead of a room that holds 150 or 200, because those rooms aren't big enough. I mean, there's more and more people, I have to say, but still, again, I'm still in the minority. And, you know, when we're in a conference like the Money Show and there's 100 different speakers and maybe 5 of them are bearish, so we're still in the minority, the people who are presenting these types of viewpoints. But if somebody is presenting them, there's still a significant number of people that want to hear an alternative point of view. And I think those numbers are growing, certainly as my advice and my recommendations are proving over time to be correct. You know, I mean, that's one of the things, you know, when the people on CNBC will kind of accuse you, well, you know, how long have you been bearish? You know, well, I have to remind them that, you know, the market's been going nowhere for 6 years. So for the last 6 years, being bearish has been the right thing to do. I mean, I can turn it around on them and say, how long have you been bullish? Because these guys have been bullish for the last 6 years. In fact, they've probably been bullish for a lot longer than that, but they're always bullish. That's the point. You know, I'm not always bearish. I mean, I was bullish a long time ago, but the problem is, the problems for the United States are severe, and they've been brewing. I mean, the defense that most people have when they hear my arguments, they say, well, you know, people have been saying this for years. Well, they have, and they've been right. These problems have been building for years. The problem is, you know, 10 years ago, they were small problems. Now they're major problems. It's like, you know, you don't get lung cancer, you know, after you smoke your first cigarette. You might have to smoke them for 20 or 30 years before you get cancer. But, you know, you can tell somebody that they start smoking early that that's a problem, and if they keep smoking, they might get cancer. Well, this cancer on the American economy started a long time ago. You know, we were the world's wealthiest creditor nation up until the point in the 1970s. We had a huge trade surplus. We started going from trade deficits to trade deficits, and that was a problem. But, you know, we started as a very, very healthy economy. And this cancer has been growing for a long time, and for a while, you know, we could live with it, you know, because we were so healthy to begin with. But the problem is now the thing has grown so enormous that we're near death. But these guys on CNBC or the people that, you know, are arguing the other point of view are saying, well, we're not dead yet, so we have nothing to worry about. But meanwhile, the cancer is growing. And, you know, again, it also reminds me of that analogy, you know, if a man jumps off of the top of a 100-story building, you know, when he's on the 50th floor, he can say, well, so far, so good. Yeah, but we know that he's going to hit the ground and he's going to be dead. That's the same thing. Yeah, has the economy completely collapsed? No, not yet, but it's going to. We just haven't hit the ground yet. But, you know, all I want to do is make sure that I can help save as many people. Or, you know, I look at another analogy. It's just like we're in a car and we're going pedal to the metal towards a cliff. Now, we haven't gone over the edge yet, but it's staring us in the face. And rather than just sitting in the car waiting for it to go over the edge while we're still on board, let's jump out now. You know, and jumping out means jumping out of the dollar, getting rid of your dollars, and accumulating a portfolio of conservative interest and dividend-paying foreign stocks and bonds. And that's the key. And again, I'm emphasizing conservative because the whole idea is to conserve purchasing power. We're not investing internationally because we're looking to speculate. We're not looking for risk. If we wanted to speculate, we'd stay right here in the dollar in the U.S. market. There's plenty of risk here. I want to get rid of risk. I don't want risk. That's why I want to invest in these foreign countries, because contrary to the conventional wisdom, the risk is right here. The risk is in America. The only way to play it safe is to get out. And, you know, fortunately, you know, there are ways to do that. And there's not a lot of brokerage firms that are even able to help you in this respect. I mean, there's just not enough people out there who understand that this is something that needs to be done, and Wall Street, the Main Street, is meant to satisfy the demands of the majority of people. They're looking for economies of scale, and they're also looking to give the public what the public wants. I mean, educating the public to understand these big pictures, to understand economics and understand all that, they don't want to do that, right? Even if they understood it, it's too much work. They just want to find out what the public wants and then sell it to them. That's the easy way, right? Give them what they want, even if what they want is the wrong thing. What I'm trying to do, what Europe Pacific's trying to do, is educate the clients and potential clients as to what they should be doing, what they need to be doing, not what they want to do, right? Because what they want to do in many cases is the wrong thing. I mean, I had that problem in the 1990s. What my customers wanted to do was buy internet stocks, but that's not what they needed to do. And I had to spend a lot of time convincing people to do what they didn't want to do. And it would have been a lot easier for me to just give them what they wanted and go on to the next guy. That's what everybody else did. But I couldn't do that. I mean, that's not the kind of broker that I wanted to be. I wanted to tell the clients the right thing to do, regardless of how difficult it was, or if in the short run it meant that my income had to suffer. And it did. I mean, my income suffered as a broker in the late 1990s, no question about it. But again, I mean, I'm not an altruist. I mean, I wasn't just, you know, doing this, you know, without a greater purpose. I knew that if I did the right thing by my customers, if I put my customers first, I knew in the long run it would pay off. Then in the long run, I'd have more happy customers and get more referrals and be better off than the brokers who were taking the easy way and just selling the public the internet stocks they wanted and cashing the fat commission checks. And I think I was right, because my income is actually very, very high now, and it's been extremely high these last few years. And I think I've made more than made up for the income that I sacrificed in the late 90s by spending, so much time with people telling them not to buy these stocks. Because, you know, telling people not to buy stocks didn't make me any money. Because I don't get a commission for people not doing things. And they were tough times, too, in 1998, 1999, when other brokers were having a heyday and making a ton of money on people who are their clients buying these IPOs, and, of course, all their clients lost, and the brokers walked away fat. I was, struggling. I was, just barely making it back in the late 90s, But in any event, it all paid off, and I've got a lot of happy clients who would vouch for that. But anyway, it's the same situation today, right? The same thing. Wall Street is feeding the same propaganda, the same lies where they were able to perpetuate the myth of the new economy and the myth of American productivity, despite the fact that we weren't producing anything. They're doing the same thing today on the myth of the fact that there's no inflation. In fact, I remember, and you can read my commentaries on my website, back when the Fed was talking about deflation, I said that that's nonsense. I said that they raised deflation as a straw man, that they knew that there was no chance of deflation. What they were really doing was creating inflation, but they thought that by getting people to be worried about deflation, that they wouldn't mind all the inflation that they were creating. And then when eventually inflation got higher, instead of the public reacting by saying, oh no, inflation is getting worse, they thought the public would say, hooray, there's no deflation. I mean, it was a beautiful piece of propaganda and manipulation that the Fed did, and they didn't fool me. I nailed them and called them on it. They didn't fool me, but they fooled everybody else. Anyway, let's take one more break. I'll play a commercial on how to get a hold of us at Euro Pacific Capital, and we'll pick it up at the other end of the break for the last segment. You want to play that commercial?
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Well, we're back. Just last segment, about another 15 minutes left to go. You know, we've only had one caller the whole hour. I don't understand. I mean, I wonder maybe the tower isn't working. But if you're out there, give me a call. I want to know that at least I'm not talking to myself here. The number is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. Call, please. If you're going to call soon before we run out of time. Call if you disagree with me. Is there anybody out there listening to this program that actually believes the government, believes Wall Street, that there's no inflation? If you do, give me a call. I'd like to hear from you. 888-678-9597. Also, call to talk about any financial subject, political subject, economics. I'm here to answer your questions to try to help you achieve a better investment result. Again, it's 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Well, as I said, yeah, the money show went well. We had a small room. But we filled it up, and hopefully the one coming up in Washington in August will be a bigger room, and we can accommodate a greater number of people. If you are interested in going to the Money Show in August in Washington, D.C., probably not the greatest time to go. There will probably be kind of humid. But we'll definitely have a heated discussion in my conference and my workshop. We'll have a booth, and so it's a good time to meet us. And again, you can go to our website to get information. It's www.europac.net, www.europac.net, and to get information about where we're going to be, and also themoneyshow.com, I think, for the Money Show. And then we're going to be doing another one in San Francisco. I think that's coming up in October, so later in the year, probably better weather out there. But either, you know, either venue would be good. I'm not even sure. Hopefully, we might be in New Orleans conference as well for that conference down in New Orleans. I think is going to be in November. We're still working on that, so I'm not positive on that, but I think we'll end up going down there as well. Anyway, we've also got another call on the line. We've got Gary, who just called in from Kansas City. Go ahead, Gary.
Tonight.
Hey, hello?
Yes, I'm listening on 5070 tonight.
Hi, Gary. Well, nice to have you on board. Do you have a question or comment?
No, I'm just saying I agree with you that I think this follows will be a catalyst of what's going to happen on the front of the economic structure of a lot of things collapsing slowly again.
Well, yeah, are you doing anything to protect yourself?
Yeah, silver. I've been investing for 3 years and made a lot of money on that, more than I could ever.
Silver's up around $7 an ounce right now, and it was down in the fours a few years ago. And, you know, we sell a lot of silver to our clients. I mean, we recommend a program called the Perth Mint Certificate Program, which we think is the most economical, affordable way for individual investors to own gold, silver, or platinum. We've got a lot of information on the Perth Mint Program on my website at www.europac.net, or give us a call and talk to one of our brokers. But this is the lowest cost, safest, the best way to buy, particularly silver, but gold as well. And again, the number to call for information on the Perth Mint is 800-727-7922. And I thank you for your call, Gary, and keep on listening and tell your friends.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. And we've also got a call now coming in. Eric is calling from Savannah. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, I wonder what you think about China, the country that China produces so many of our goods now, would have on our investing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talked about earlier in the program, we're recommending a lot of these Chinese utilities as a way to get in. But, I mean, China is the country for the 21st century. I mean, if anybody can't see that's happening, I mean, all you've got to do is walk into a store and just look at all the products and see where they're made. I mean, the reason that America became the world's wealthiest country is because we produced everything. We did in the past what China's doing now. We became wealthy because we produced stuff that everybody wanted. That's China. We became wealthy because we saved a lot. Now we don't save anything. China is where the savings are. The people in China are hardworking, they're saving, and they're producing. Americans are just profligate. We're consuming. We're borrowing to the hilt. We're producing next to nothing. They've got the real economy. We've got a bubble. They're the producers. We're the consumers. They're the lenders. We're the borrowers. They're the future. We're the past. Unfortunately, that's the way it is. That's why Jimmy Rogers has his daughter learning Mandarin. You know, anybody that can think ahead can see what's coming, can see the future. And so we want to invest there. You know, investing in China today is like investing in the United States in the 1800s. You know, China is the place of the future. We're in the position that Great Britain occupied at the turn of the last century. Great Britain was the falling economic power, and we were the rising economic power. Today, America is the falling economic power, and China, and also countries like, you know, Japan, these are the countries that are the rising powers, certainly. And so we want to invest there. We want to be there. We want to take part in it. We want to participate in it.
I see. China uses more diesel fuel or oil, refined oil products now than any country in the world, I believe.
Now, we still use 50% of the world's gasoline because we still consume a lot. They use a lot of the natural resources to produce things. But wait till the dollar collapses against a free-floating renminbi. I mean, wait till the Chinese start consuming all the gasoline instead of Americans. I mean, wait till we have to outbid these Chinese. Because they're a lot more productive than we are. And they save a lot more, and they work a lot harder. In productive. I mean, Americans go to work every day. The problem is they go to work and they don't produce. There's a big difference between going to work and producing and going to work and not producing. Right? It's like we've got one American digging a hole and another American filling it right back up again. So the fact that two Americans are working hard all day digging, we accomplish nothing. Because in the end, we're right back where we started.
So it's work ethic or efficiency.
Yeah, but we're just not producing. That's the problem. We're consuming. We're servicing one another. And services are fine as long as you can support them. But you can't have a service sector economy with nobody producing. Because that means you've got to live off the productivity of somebody else, and that somebody else is going to get tired of supporting you. And I think that day is coming. But anyway, Eric, I really appreciate the call. Are you a client?
No.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Oh, that's good question.
Yeah, call us up. I mean, you got to get your money over here, your dollars over to our firm before they're not worth anything.
Sure.
Help you convert them into real assets that provide you with income, dividends, in currencies that will gain value.
I want to hang up now. I want to, if you will, after I hang up, comment on the immigration into the United States from Mexico, how that will or affect our economy or how it is.
I'll try if I have some time. All right, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
And I know we've also got Larry on the line, too, from Orlando. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, hi, Peter. I have a question. First of all, let me comment that I did see your second visit with CNBC.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the first one, too, or just
the
second?
I saw the first one. It was fabulous. The second guys, they kind of ambushed you. I think they had a couple of weeks to think about what they were going to say.
Well, the problem with the second one is I didn't actually go to the studio, which I should have done. I mean, I just went to Stanford, which is closer to my house.
Sure.
So what happens is I'm in a little room all by myself. I can't see anybody, and all I have is a little earphone, and I can kind of hear him talking, but I can't really involve myself in the conversation directly. You don't really know when you can speak, and everybody thinks they can kind of ignore me because I'm all out in the distance.
Yeah, they wouldn't let you speak, and you could see that, you know. But anyhow, I have a question, Pete.
Yeah.
Please tell me what your feelings are now with gold reserves, the oil reserves dropping, not the reserves, oil dropping.
Oh, well, okay, oil has pulled back. Look, nothing goes up in a straight line, right? Oil prices have been rising since they were about $16 or $17 a barrel. We've been as high as 57 or 58 in this cycle. We've pulled back. We're around 48 now. I think the major breakout in oil was above $40. So $40 was the breakout. That was the level that held every major oil rally for 20 or 30 years. So oil has just recently broken out. It's going to be choppy in here, but it's going a lot higher. And this is perfectly normal volatility in a market that has broken out. We've got a lot of bears in the market right now, which is very healthy for a bull market, and it's going higher, particularly when the dollar finally breaks. When the dollar finally cracks through support in the dollar index at 80 and starts to free fall, which I expect to happen either this year or next, oil prices in terms of dollars are going to take off. And you want to use this opportunity, this weakness in energy, to buy more of the oil trusts that we're buying in Canada and use the strength of the dollar to get rid of more dollars and buy assets around the world. Because once the dollar collapses, it's too late. You know, once everybody realizes the emperor has no clothes, you know, it's over with. You can only sell your dollars as long as someone else is dumb enough to buy them, or the central banks are buying them. But once they come to their senses, the party's over.
Yeah, there's no telling where how far oil will drop from this point, but you expect it's going to
be... I don't think it's going to go back below 40. I'd be surprised if it did, but I think it's a buy right around this level, and I think we're headed higher.
Yeah, okay.
And right now it's kind of choppy, but, you know, just to pick your spot. But anyway, look, now we're getting a lot of calls. Everybody's got a call throughout the program, you know, instead of jamming it in the last 5 or 10 minutes. But I'm up CNBC. Tell them to have me on again and call up our company and set up an account if you haven't already done so.
I'm a client, and I'm appreciative of the results so far. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Nick. And Alan is on the line from New York. Go ahead, Alan.
Hey,
turn down your radio. You got your radio on.
Well, not my radio, my laptop.
Laptop, yeah. Go ahead, you're on the air with Peter Schiff.
Oh, I'm on. Oh, I've heard a lot of people talking about China. I was wondering what your thoughts are about India.
Well, you know, India is a country that still, for my taste, has a little bit too much government. They're not as manufacturing intensive as China. They're more service oriented. They do have a lot of very intelligent people there, particularly, you know, computer related type people, you know, engineering background, computer software design. A lot of bright Indians are very, very bright people, but I think they still have too much government for my taste, and I still prefer China as a place to invest.
I see.
And meanwhile, you're in the city. I don't know if you are associated with that university club, but if you are, definitely come down and hear me speak on Tuesday.
Uh-huh. Okay. Sounds great.
And thanks for the call. And are you a client of ours yet?
I am not, no.
All right. Well, great. Give us a call when you get a chance. I know I've got one more call I want to take. We're nearing the end of the program. But don't forget to everybody call in again next week too, so we call them earlier in the show.
Excellent, thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
And I know we still got Nick on line from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Nick.
Oh, I've been listening to your program here, and I got a comment. Maybe you won't like it, but Americans ain't just sitting back. fact doing nothing. The government stole all the steel mills and stuff and shipped them over to China.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. I'm not saying that it's the American. I mean, we're still the same Americans we were 50 or 100 years ago. Certainly, the government has done a lot to take away the entrepreneurial spirit, and Wall Street has done a lot to brainwash the public into thinking that they can get rich easy. But there's nothing inherently wrong with Americans. I mean, we're the same people that built a great country. Unfortunately, we don't have the same country. We don't have limited government anymore. We don't have low taxes and low regulations. And I think our educational system has really collapsed. And I think Americans have been dumbed down over the generations.
Absolutely correct. I agree with everything you say.
And unfortunately, we got to deal with the reality that today. And since I can't do anything to change what's going on, I'm going to at least help try to preserve and protect the wealth of as many of my clients as I possibly can. And hopefully, I'll be able to have a say in what we do to help rebuild this country. Hopefully, all the people that had no idea what was going on, that sold us a bunch of goods, hopefully they'll be thoroughly discredited by the time the collapse happens, and hopefully people like me who really understand the problems and understand what the solutions are and what they're not, hopefully my voice will be heard. I mean, I'll certainly have a lot of money to help, but hopefully I'll be able to influence the debate and the direction in which this country goes, because we're going to be at a very, very difficult crossroads very soon.
Yeah, I agree. I'll tell you what, I just heard today it's so bad around here, the hookers come down to 10 bucks a hit.
Where's that? Reading, Pennsylvania. All right, anybody listening from Reading, $10. All right, but hey, thanks for your call, and keep on listening, and tell your friends, spread the word.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure thing.
See you.
Anyway, yeah, I know we're running close to the end, and yeah, I gotta remind people to call earlier, because we'd have more time for your calls and your questions. If we got calls at the beginning of the program, instead of everybody calling in, we got 6 calls or so in the last 5 minutes, so we don't have as much time to address the point. So next week, try to call in earlier, and we'll be able to spend a little bit more time. I know another caller asked about immigration. I'm going to run out of time. If anybody wants to ask about immigration next week, just give me a call. Same time next week, same number. We're on every Wednesday night live at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen to us on shortwave or on my website at www.europac.net, www.europac.net. Call us toll free anytime at 800-727-7922. That's 800-727-7922. This is Peter Schiff. I'm president of Euro Pacific Capital, full service brokerage firm in Newport Beach, California, and now in Darien, Connecticut as well. Hoping to be with you all again next week. Keep on listening. Tell your friends. Spreading the word. Call CNBC and tell them you want me back. Talk to you next week. So long, folks.